protesters across the U.S. Rioters take advantage. Dukakis in a tank is now the second worst political photo op. DeCampbell pulled from farmers. Indiana joins a list of closed state fairs. The Department of Justice investigating meat packers. The jobless rate improves amid the pandemic. This week alone sounds like an entire new verse in Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire.
Live from a variety of secluded international locations via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney. I've had some newsman Davis Michelson, and now in for the lollygagging Chip Flory, the overlord of oration, the emperor of exhortation, John Harris.
Oh, he's not lollygagging. You know what he's doing. He's hunting more chipmunks. That's what he's doing.
Is that what he's doing?
I bet you anything that's where he is right
now. I'm here to tell you.
He's outdoors somewhere, I'm sure.
Yes, he's got the fever for ground squirrel meat. And I don't know, you know, if pork week is the appropriate time to be trying alternative meats or not. I guess
you wrap it in bacon,
judge.
It's great.
That doesn't sound too bad, actually.
No, it doesn't. We may have to try that. Hey, David, so glad to have you here today. We've got
what
a week to be doing the Friday free-for-all. It's mind-blowing what all has happened this week. I'm sure we won't have a chance to get it all, but it's one of those weeks where you don't even know where to start.
Yes, and, you know, to me, as a newsman, you know, I kind of thought I was looking ahead during the whole pandemic lockdown and all that stuff. I figured by June 5th, we might be in the clear a little bit news-wise. Things would be looking up, but other issues just continue to pile on to this situation here.
Yeah, well, and because you thought it would be, you know, people would be getting back outside and back out socializing again, and they're doing that.
Yes, they are.
People are back outside.
But the weird news oddities just don't stop. John.
They don't. Well, give us today's dose of those weird news oddities today, Davis.
Yes. Well, this one's actually not too bad. U.S. Secretary of Ag Sonny Perdue has reached out to the Environmental Protection Agency, urging EPA to, quote, use any available flexibilities to allow the continued use of already purchased dicamba products, which are a critical tool for American farmers to combat weeds resistant to many other herbicides in fields that are already planted. John, this comes after the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decided to vacate dicamba registrations. This is a big one. We were talking yesterday on the show, and I forget who we were talking to. She said she talked to a farmer who said this comes either, what was it, 2 years too late or a month too early?
Yeah, it falls right in there. And I know Pam Johnson's got some words about this. I think we're going to start there when we get wound up with the free-for-all in the next segment.
Good deal. Oh, yes, it was Sonia Begeman. Sonia Begeman.
Yeah.
The Department of Justice continues to look into the beef packing industry as investigations surrounding the Holcomb, Kansas fire and coronavirus are ongoing. The DOJ has requested information from four major U.S. beef packers, including Tyson, JBS, Cargill, and National Beef. This after several state attorneys general appealed to Attorney General William Barr, noting there have been signs meat packers have driven farm gate prices lower while boosting prices to consumers. President Trump has endorsed the investigation. And, John, we reported yesterday that there were some chicken industry CEOs in Dutch, and now they're talking about the beef guys.
Yeah, it's interesting how this is falling in line. It'll be interesting to see if there was anything that came out of that poultry investigation that aided in getting these warrants to seek information from the meat packers.
Mm-hmm. Well, members of the OPEC cartel are thought to have scheduled a meeting this weekend to discuss extending oil production cuts. A tentative agreement apparently was reached between Saudi Arabia and Russia after a week of confabs. Iraq's compliance over the past month has been less than 50%, but that country was said to be in agreement. Details are forthcoming, but a failure to reach an agreement could flood the market with millions of barrels of crude oil. This is an important agreement to get here for those producers. Democrats Indeed. And Republicans on the Hill are divided on extending extra funding to unemployed workers. Those who have lost jobs during the pandemic have been privy to an extra $600 per week in addition to their regular benefits. Republicans contend many workers are making more money on unemployment than they were at their actual jobs, de-incentivizing a return to work. Officials say while the extra cash may stimulate the economy near term, the longer term impacts may be damaging to the economy and the workforce. And this is one of those issues where Democrats and Republicans on the Hill really differ. John.
Yeah, they do. And I got to say, from experience in my household here, my wife is a substitute teacher. Yes, in theory, she would make more under the unemployment. However, she has not received a single check like a lot of other people out there. And as I've said before, in our household, you know, it's not an issue. But I do worry very much for those who are waiting for those checks and desperately need them.
U.S. exports and imports both posted their largest monthly decreases on record in April. Global trade flows are likely to perk up in the coming weeks as countries reopen from closures, but shipments of things like aircraft and automobiles have fallen sharply. Ag trade registered a monthly trade deficit on the month at $733.8 billion. That marks the second consecutive month of a negative trade balance and the third in 4 months. John, American Airlines says it expects to fly 55% of its domestic scheduled flights in July. That's up from May, when the airline flew just 20% of its scheduled flights in the U.S. Other airlines are taking a less aggressive approach. And finally, quickly, drug maker AstraZeneca is hoping to produce 2 billion doses of a coronavirus vaccine, including 400 million doses for the U.S. and the U.K. and 1 billion doses for low and middle income countries. However, John, the vaccine still faces clinical trials.
All right. But yeah, good to see them at least getting ready to be ready to produce as soon as they get approval after those hopefully successful clinical trials. Thanks, Davis.
You bet.
All right. Let's turn to Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, wow. Wrapped up a pretty exciting and busy pork week here. I know when we talked earlier on one of our calls, you said you were trying to celebrate pork week by having pork at least two meals a day. Were you successful?
Oh, yeah, we were successful. And my family wouldn't let me forget either. There was one night where I was working late on stories, and they said, hey, you promised. So got the pork chops out and put them on the grill, and I'm doing our best to celebrate pork here in Sidoras.
All right, great. Well, and you're going to wrap up Pork Week today with an interesting webinar looking at some of the issues that are facing the pork industry right now.
Yes, today we're going to dig into African swine fever, and this is a topic that's maybe taken a bit of a backseat in the news right now just because of all the other issues the industry is dealing with, but it's certainly not taken a backseat from those who are working hard to make sure we keep this disease out. And so we're going to get an update from Gordon Spronk and Liz Wagstrom and Patrick Webb on the latest about African swine fever and kind of what are some of the things we've learned from COVID-19 that may be able to help us in the event of a future foreign animal disease outbreak.
Yeah, and we've seen this come up time and again. I'm you know, going back years to the foot and mouth disease outbreaks, and we were able to keep that out of the United States. And so while I know a lot of this seems like, okay, that was yesterday's news, it is so important to stay on top of it and keep developing new methods to keep these diseases out of our out of the U.S. herd.
Absolutely. And we hope you can join us at 11 a.m. Central Time today for that webinar. You can get more information and sign up at porkbusiness.com.
That's porkbusiness.com. Go check it out. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
We'll be back with a free-for-all on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarafly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This special edition of AgriTalk is supporting Pork Week, paying tribute to pork producers who bring lean and nutrient-rich pork to your table. Coverage brought to you by Merck, PIC, United Animal Health, Alltech Hubbard, and Hypor. Learn more at porkbusiness.com.
Indeed, supporting Pork Week here on AgriTalk. I think I have to throw some pork chops on the grill myself tonight. Sounds pretty good. Hey, welcome to AgriTalk. I'm John Harris, sitting in for Chip Flory on vacation today. And it's the usual Friday free-for-all. We got Pam Johnson from Iowa. Hey, Pam.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning. And we got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmers Policy Analyst. And hopefully soon we will have Sean Haney, who's having a little trouble getting across the border from Canada, real agriculture in Canada up there. And hopefully he'll be with us shortly. Maybe it is that, Jim, that ban on border crossing from Canada. They're keeping him away from us.
Well, anyone but Sean, let's say. Okay.
Anyone but Sean. Yeah. He's practically an honorary American at this point.
Is.
Come on. Yeah.
He is.
Well, Pam, let's start with you today because I know you want to talk about this Ninth Circuit Court ruling that essentially pulls the registration for three of the four available dicamba products. Let's just first start with timing. It really could not be any worse, could it?
No, because we're just getting, here in Iowa, we're just getting ready to start needing to apply this. And yes, we did know that this was, the first suit had been filed in 2017, I believe. But I think the bottom line is farmers cannot grow crops without crop protection products. And first it was the attack on Roundup and now dicamba products. And there aren't many alternatives, and farmers have learned how to use them responsibly and for timing and wind speed. And so this is just absolutely devastating. We got the product on the farm, or we've already purchased it, and so many unknowns. So, you know, we're wondering what happens here. Nice to hear that Sonny Perdue's called out for some action, but how quickly that will come, we don't know. So once again, we're in this limbo of uncertainty.
What are you looking to do on your farm for weed control now that, at least at this moment, dicamba is off the table?
Well, we plant dicamba beans, so that was the plan. And so I don't know where we go from here. From what I've been reading is, you know, EPA has no response about what guidelines are going to be for retailers or farmers. So I don't know. Farmers are frustrated or angry. This is just like one of the last straws. It seems like every week there's a last straw.
Now, there's still the opportunity for EPA to file for a stay of this that would allow for application yet this year until the issue is reviewed. But, of course, that takes time. How big of a window do you have there in your area before it really doesn't matter? You've passed the window.
Well, I think, you know, that stay has to happen, like, now, because it's time to begin spraying here. And there really aren't any alternatives. And, you know, my first reaction is, oh, my gosh, the three judges said in California, well, they knew the practical effect of what this decision was going to make, but really they can't know it because there aren't any alternatives.
No. Which is the big challenge here. And the other real strange twist to this is that the registration that is the subject of this suit only covers through this year. These companies are going through the registration process for 2021 and beyond right now. So this ruling only affects this very narrow window here. So it seems odd that they would take the action that they did, given that it only affects that one little window.
Yeah, and, you know, it was an issue that came up in California, and I'm not sure if it originated with vegetables or grapes or what the issues were out there, but since the ruling was in a federal court, it applies blanket across the whole United States, even though it's, you know, there's no problems here. if it's used with label, paying attention to wind speeds and temperature and timelines and all the things that have come out in the guidelines to make this a safe product.
Do you think this will cause growers to think twice about dicamba next year if there is a label registration for next year?
Well, you know, when you're making your plans for what you're going to plant, it is one of your first considerations is the hybrids that you're going to use and that they're good yielding and they're hybrids that are appropriate for your area. And these new chemistries that have come out are, you weigh the potential of not only having good crop protection, but also having a good crop in the genetics. So lots of decision points in there. And I don't think at this point, at this early in the game, that we can say how this is going to change what we're going to do. I think one thing it does tell us that we've known all along, and I've spent the last 20 years doing, is how important it is for growers and the industry to be able to tell the story about why these crop protection products are important. And these battles started first in the EU, and now it seems like they've moved to the United States, where it's becoming harder and harder to defend the use of these products, even though the science tells you they're safe, like Roundup.
Indeed. Jim, what are you hearing on your end? Is EPA going to ask for a stay on this? Are they going to challenge this ruling?
Of course. EPA did release a statement saying they're reviewing the court decision and they'll move promptly to address the court's directive. And usually in situations like this, they do issue a stay. So we'll see. You can't count on that, but I would signal that that's probably going to be the course, and then let the chips fall where they may in the re-registration. That's when to have the battleground, not after farmers put the bulk of the soybeans in the ground. This is just silly again.
Indeed. You know, go ahead, Pam.
John, excuse me. Yeah, you know, local retail is trying to bring in product and alternatives, but at this stage of the game, there just is not enough for everyone and for everyone to switch. So it just really makes a very hard situation for the whole value chain.
Well, John, don't you think one of the challenges here is the fact that a lot of this product is already on the ground? And, you know, I was asking questions yesterday about, you know, what are the consequences if somebody was to forge ahead and go off label and still use the product as they had originally intended. Not a lot of fast and concrete answers on that one. And the reality is for the 21 crop, you know, this doesn't involve the trait. It's only to do with the product. And right. So therefore, you know, if that registration isn't renewed on the product or the use of it, we're going to have a whole bunch of beans. That seed production's in the ground now for the 21 crop. And so we're going to have this mm-hmm. trait issue next year. So this is just not it's just really unfortunate the court did not recognize the realities of crop production. I don't expect them to. It's just, it's quite unfortunate. And we saw, you know, this is also a week, you know, Pam mentioned, you know, the future of other products. We saw a company like Lemkin, which doesn't have, you know, their tillage tools are here, but not their sprayers. You know, they're dropping 100% out of the sprayer business and moving more to focusing on their mechanical weed removal products, which I found very interesting and kind of an indication of where Europe is in terms of weed removal and the use of pesticides going forward. We're maybe going a little bit back in time instead of forward.
John, my talks with seed company people off the record, they bottom line saying the bigger question is, will the California court action override EPA registrations, and what does it mean for the EPA?
Yeah, that is interesting, and we're going to have to. There's just a whole laundry list of questions that come out here, you know, especially for the producer of, okay, if I already have the product, am I stuck with it and the cost associated with it? We've had questions coming in about are we going to get any sort of refund on the seed that we purchased based on using this system? I mean, just the list of questions goes on and on and on, and nobody has any answers yet because it's just, you know, come up too quickly here.
John, I think Sean brings up a really good point about the future. And going backwards, I farmed long enough where we used to cultivate and have to cultivate many times. And now we're no-till and minimum till. And if we're going to address climate change and the whole new programs that are coming out and sequester carbon, we can't do that by going backwards to mechanization.
Indeed. We'll be back and continue this discussion on the Free For All on AgriTalk.
Partner Merck Animal Health sales and technical service teams are dedicated to the well-being of the swine industry and the people behind it. Merck Animal Health, driven by prevention.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer, joins us. Brian, what's the update here at midday?
Well, John, we had more daily export sales for soybeans this morning, fourth day in a row this week, and five of the past 6 days. So that's giving a little bit of support to soybeans, but quite honestly, it's been two-sided trade this morning. So not reacting real well to that news. I think some of that was expected with China in the market. Now, a large part of those sales have been to unknown, but it's assumed that China's a buyer of at least a portion, if not all, of those unknown purchases. The corn market, it's kind of trying to do its job on its own almost. It's trying to pull soybeans higher, and the reverse was the case yesterday. Corn's up only a penny plus, but still providing some support to soybeans. And then the wheat market, it was firmer early on in the week, contra-seasonal strength there as the U.S. dollar dropped. But the dollar's firmer this morning, and we've seen sellers come back into the wheat market as a result.
All right, what about livestock?
Well, the cattle market, it's been a struggle to find buyers. We did see some early strength in that marketplace, but we have backed off here mid-morning and trading with a weaker tone. Slight losses in most of the contracts, though August live cattle are moderately lower here. On the hog side of things, the June contract is under a little bit of price pressure, but we do see some moderate to strong gains in the back end of that market. So hogs are performing better than cattle are here to close out the week, but really it's been weakness throughout the week here, generally speaking, for both the live cattle, feeder cattle, and hog markets.
All right, that's Pro Farmer's Brian Grady with Markets Now on AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, the Friday free-for-all here. I'm John Harith, filling in for Chip, who's on vacation today, joined as always on Fridays by Pam Johnson, Jim Wiesmeyer, and Sean Haney. And let's turn to China. Jim, it's been kind of a back-and-forth week on China news. We heard reports earlier in the week that Chinese companies were being ordered to stop purchases from the U.S. Then we saw reports that purchases were continuing. We heard Brian Grady say in Markets Now that purchases are continuing. So flipping over to our podcast, where's the signal? Where's the noise in this?
Well, the signal we got after calling more than a few China watchers say that there is officially no pause on Chinese purchases from state institutions of U.S. farm products. And then you had U.S. trade rep Lighthizer say yesterday the agreement was signed in January. Many ways it was March 2nd before they could get some of their things in place, meaning that their tariff exemptions. And then when you look at what they've done since March 2nd, they've done a pretty good job. They've bought over $185 million worth of U.S. soybeans this week. Bottom line, John, we're getting in early signals that the trade timeline may move from a calendar year basis to an April through March of next year. that would garner the majority of the months, October through March, in which usually 70% of China's purchases of U.S. Farm products take place. They need soybeans, and it looks like they're waiting on new crop soybeans from a protein perspective.
Jim, isn't that kind of... I get why they want to shift that timeline, but isn't it kind of like when you're playing rock, paper, scissors, and it's like you lose the first two and you're like, okay, best of three or best of
not
five,
really.
Best
not
of seven?
Not really. I don't think so, really, because I think Lighthizer has a legitimate point. It was announced January the 15th. It was supposed to take effect February the 14th. China did surprise them by taking longer than expected to get their process going relative to, USTR calls it exceptions, but it's really tariff exemptions. And you didn't really get the first trade data until April. Because even though they started in March, you don't get that data until April. So I honestly think a case can be made to give them that one quarter extension, April through March of next year.
And Pam, we heard your Senator Grassley making the rounds, including our Farm Journal Live this week, saying that he's confident that there's nothing to worry about here, that the Chinese are going to follow through with their commitments under phase one, as Jim mentioned, only under a slightly delayed timeline to finish out the requirements of phase one. Where do you sit with that? Is your concern eased about whether or not we're going to see the phase one commitments of up to some $40 billion in purchases made? Do you think they're going to live up to that?
No, I would have to, respectfully disagree with my senior senator, because I think it is an issue and it is a concern. I think we're at $3 billion of imports, $3 billion of imports now, and we're supposed to be at 36. And we know the clause in there that China says that they will buy if it makes sense. And, why did we get into this mess in the first place? Was because of negative trade balances, right? And ag always had a positive trade balance, and now we're at a negative trade balance with agriculture. So, no, my concerns are not laid aside yet until we see it start to happen. And I guess end of story. I'm concerned.
The trade deficit is actually a good point, because we're seeing the trade deficit shrink when the economy has shrunk, which kind of proves the argument that a lot of economists were making in regards to the argument about trade surpluses versus deficits and what would be good for the American economy. I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, indeed. So, Jim, when should we realistically be seeing these purchases ramp up?
Well, I think you're starting to see it in the beans. And, basically Brazil has sold out of old crop, and China's starting to buy new crop, beans out of Brazil for March, April delivery. And now we got the dollar going down. We've got the China's hog production on the rise. They had a law officially in China either late last year or early this year banning the feeding of garbage in China to the hog sector. So that means an increased use of more soybeans and corn, et cetera, for the future. Plus, if they indeed are going with that, they need more strategic reserves if they're going to continue that ban on garbage feed, because prior to that, up to 50% was that product, John. So, yeah, I know this is a minority viewpoint, but I'll go with Lighthizer. I think he's got credibility, and he must know what apparently a lot of traders, farmers, and analysts don't.
Well, it is his deal, though. He's going to pump it up, because he negotiated it. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch what the president says about this deal between now and November. Because on one hand, he wants China to come through with the phase one, because he wants farmers to succeed. They're a very supportive, big part of his base. But on the other hand, he knows it's been politically beneficial to rail against China and talk about the things that China's not doing. And so I think it's going to be very, very fascinating to watch him kind of ebb and flow back and forth. I'm sure he will. He won't pick a side. He will go back and forth on this one and as we head into the election in November.
Yeah. Well both countries worked over a year. Both countries worked over a year on this trade agreement. And honestly, I think they, you know, both wanted to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the president also was found it politically advantageous to distract with railing against China over coronavirus. And given the current political climate, it would not be unthought of for him to take that tack again to try to distract away from other issues that are going on and, again, try to place blame on China for the spread of coronavirus.
Yeah, and John, we all want it to succeed, right?
Right.
And farmers might not be as smart as Lighthizer on the policy and the history of the policy, but we're certainly ground-truthing this every day. We turn on our computers and look at what the market price of soybeans and corn and ethanol and all the livestock are because of the trade disruption. And it hurts. That ground-truthing hurts.
Let's look on the positive side, though, and we saw a new Purdue Ag Barometer come out this week, and actually optimism was growing in that barometer for the first time in a while. It started to, while the numbers still weren't great, there was the immediate number was up and the outlook number was up, giving a sign that that those involved in farming and agribusiness do think that there are brighter times ahead. Pam, where do you think that optimism is coming from?
The checks in the mailbox. I think it's great. You know, farmers are optimists. We wouldn't be farmers if we weren't optimistic. But the pain of this has been taken away, a lot of it, by some of the support from the government. And we've talked about this before, is that is not sustainable when you look at the federal deficit and you look at other sectors in the economy, in the U.S. economy, that are hurting also. And so, yes, the short-term pain has been eased so much. And yes, I am very optimistic about agriculture in the long term, but we have a lot of issues we have to get through to get to that point. And one of them is reestablishing a market-oriented position where we can sell to the market without the constraints of trade disruptions.
But how realistic is that right now, in given how much the pandemic is impacting those usual market flows?
Exactly. That's the rub right there, is the domestic demand, the issues with the pandemic. And, you know, we think the pandemic's easing, but in Iowa it's not. Yesterday we had 694 new cases and I believe 14 new deaths, so, and problems still in the meatpacking industry. So the issues, the problems are complex. Can they be solved? Yes, they can, but it's going to take leadership.
Sean, what would you say about farmer sentiment in Canada?
I would say it depends on which sector. So if you look in Western Canada, I think things are pretty decent. They're not great, but they are, people could turn a profit. If you look at in Ontario, in Eastern Canada, where people predominantly grow corn and beans, there's just as much concern as you see in the Midwest. Beef and pork, I would say very, very similar to what you'd experience in the U.S. as well, for the exact same reasons. You know, when I look at this week's Purdue, or this month's Purdue sentiment that came out, you know, as you look ahead, clearly the CFAP program, well-timed, it stabilized people and how they feel in this current very moment. So that was a good indication. You know, if you look ahead, 60% in the next 12 months, over 60% of them said that they expect farmers' equity positions to decline over the next year. Man, that's concerning. That really stuck out for me. And, you know, I think also when the White House looks at these results and sees how these things were, the sentiment was stabilized, it does give an indication that maybe there's another program coming here in the summer to stabilize even more.
Yeah, they've been indicating that. We'll be back with more of the discussion on the free-for-all on AgriTalk.
As your innovative and invested partner, Merck Animal Health sales and technical service teams are dedicated to the well-being of the swine industry and the people behind it. Merck Animal Health, driven by prevention.
Hey.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
And welcome back to the free-for-all on AgriTalk. I'm John Harris, in for Chip Flory, joined by Sean Haney, Jim Wiesmeyer, and Pam Johnson. Jim, you've been watching the market every tick this morning. As you watch your, what'd you call it, a 301K now you're back to?
301 and a half K program.
301 and a half K.
It's come back a lot. And
some
that
good jobs numbers this morning that were a surprise.
Well, that's, yeah, because you're up almost 1,000 points on the Dow because Americans are returning to work in far greater numbers than the negative analysts and traders thought. Remember the people, some on this program who won't go unmentioned, Sean, who thought that this would be a hockey stick recovery. It's starting to look like a V-shaped recovery. Now, I know 1 month doesn't make a trend here, but maybe reassessments are going on.
See what he did there?
Yeah, we saw it.
Okay, it's a great number, okay? It is 1 month, you know, and there is still a lot of people theorizing out there that we're going to see the real layoffs will happen in September once we get through some of the wage subsidy programs. So we're not out of the woods yet, but I'll tell you what, like everybody, I was very surprised this morning, and it's a great indicator. We had great jobs numbers in Canada as well here today. So I think it's awesome to see.
The CBO estimated this week that extending the expanded jobless benefits through January 2021, which the Democrats want to do, would mean 5 in every 6 claimants would make more money from unemployment insurance than from work. That's not returning to work.
Yeah. Well, and Jim, during the break, you made an interesting point in that does the positive jobless numbers, and again, still, there are a lot of people out of work. We don't want to minimize that. But
absolutely.
The jobless number today was better than what was expected. Does that lessen the pressure on Congress to have further stimulus or stimulus at the same dollar amount that was being considered last week?
It won't be $3 trillion. It'll be $1 trillion or a little above. I think there's your parameters right there.
So then what's taken off the table?
A lot of the items that was in the Democratic proposal. How it impacts agriculture, I don't think much, because I think there was bipartisan support for a lot that was in the Democratic ag package. And, I personally thought it was pretty good policy move. So I think it'll come from outside the ag area, John.
Well, but it will impact agriculture.
Excuse me, still support for ethanol, Jim?
Yes, I do.
Where it will impact agriculture is that if Republicans feel they've got more solid ground to stand on against higher dollar subsidies, does that make it harder to get a final agreement? And let's face it, no matter what's included in the package for agriculture, it doesn't matter if they can't get it past the goalpost.
Well, the key on the Democrat support will be what type of aid to the states and what parameters are conditioned on that aid. I think that's their red line. The red line for the Republicans has been and will continue to be liability coverage for COVID ID, 19, except for flagrant violations. I think there's your two red lines, John.
Jim, I'm impressed. I think that's the first time I've heard you talk about the aid to the states without a mention of Illinois.
Well, don't get me going.
All right. Well, let's wrap up this week. I want to end on a positive note, but I think it's worth recognizing that, we talked during the breaks and before the show starts, and the universal thing among all of us this week has been just how draining and how wearing this news cycle this week has been on all of us. I know you in particular, Pam, it's just been we're all people that are engaged in the news all the time, all day long, but this week it's been difficult to do.
I think so, because, you know, America is hurting right now, and we're more divided than ever. And so this disruption is hard to take. And so I think I'm doing some soul searching about what's my responsibility to help do my little piece to get us back together again, I think. And it's quite sobering.
Yeah, I think we're all doing that in one way or another. Jim, what's been your reaction through this news cycle this week?
Again, I'm more uplifted, not just because of the stock market, although that helps, the bottom line. I went to three different restaurants, outside restaurants, this week in the Virginia suburb areas. And frankly, I liked it better because the distances between the table was actually better. You could actually hear yourself talk with your friends. So, and I saw a lot of people there. They were packed. So I think the wave will eventually hit back into the Midwest. I think they're from the cycle of this disease, I think the Midwest was expected to get hit later. And I think that's what you're seeing now. But boy, there's a lot of positive things going on, at least in this area, from a return to work aspect.
All right. And Sean, what about you this week?
Yeah, I think you described it well. It has been taxing. It's been tough. I think, you know, there's been sort of, I think, a lot of self-reflection for a lot of people. I'm glad to see that some of the looting and the violence inside some of the protests and rallies has sort of subsided somewhat, and that, you know, the rallies continue. We even had a rally here in my hometown of Lethbridge in Alberta. So we're seeing them across North America, even into Europe, and it's initiating discussions that possibly were not happening previously, and that is a good thing. But this whole incident of what has happened with George Floyd is just so tragic.
But where I see hope in that, and I've seen it all this week, is we've been down this road before. I mean, Rodney King, and we could all run through the laundry list of times when the United States has faced this same issue and not fully addressed it. This time, we're not seeing the racial separations. We're not seeing the factional separations that we've seen when we faced this before. You're seeing very unified crowds of people looking to find solutions to that, and that gives me hope that we will get farther this time than we ever have before, and hopefully actually, I don't know if we can ever fully address the issues, but at least get further down towards the end zone. So, hey, thank you all for the great conversation this week. I appreciate it, and we will come back again and have the free-for-all again next Friday. Coming up this afternoon, is this right? Ted Seifert is going to be doing the PM show? Looking forward to that. I'll be tuning in to listen to AgriTalk PM.